Hey friends, welcome to Two Pixels Off. Really excited for today's episode. My name's Brad Hussey, and we've got Mike Janda here as well.
Welcome to Two Pixels Off, a podcast for creative entrepreneurs.
Really excited for today, but before we jump into anything, I want to thank our sponsor, Wix Studio, for allowing us to make this epic show happen. Really excited about Wix Studio. If you're an agency, a freelancer, and you're building sites for clients, strongly recommend that you check it out. The business tools and the access that you got, not only to build amazing sites that are responsive by nature, but also the tools to back it up to help you run your business and your clients' businesses. It's unparalleled. So make sure to check them out. Mike, do you have any thoughts or comments on Wix Studio before we jump in?
No, it's great. It blew my mind, honestly, and we're not going to butter it up too much, but I remember Wix when it first launched 15 years ago or so, and I was running my agency at the time. And I'm not going to lie, it was not the designer's choice because some of the early templates and things were rough. And it got a little bit of a stigma about that in those early days. It is not that anymore. Check out the inspiration section on wixstudio.com because it is so capable. And the design and the templates and the modules and things are so good. Like, it's freaking admirable design and impressive in many, 100%. Many cases. So
100%. It's not your old school kind of like DIY platform. This is very much built for professionals. And I think I've always seen it whenever I've recommended it and people have got their hands on it and tried it out. It's just like, try it out and you'll actually see for yourself, be able to make a really, prudent decision for your agency. Yep. Before we go into
it, it's definitely worth checking out, especially because there's a free capability on it. Free to try it, paid to publish, just like you're going to pay for any hosting services anywhere.
Yep.
That's the way it works. But you can try it out and experiment and see what happens.
Definitely.
It's good.
Okay. It is. Make sure to, for everyone listening, let's take this second to like do the thing, the podcast thing, and ask you to leave a review on the show. Wherever you're listening, you know, everyone's got their favorite way to listen to their podcast. Leave a review on the platform that you are using, especially if you're using, say, like Apple's iTunes, like podcasts. You know, you've got Google Play, there's Spotify too. Like, leave us a review, give us that rating. And that it really helps us out, especially because this is a new show, to help us reach some new ears. And we'd really greatly appreciate that as well. So, Mike.
Awesome.
Today.
Kate. We're digging into meat much faster than in the past. Digging into the meat. This was one of our goals in the origination of this podcast, to get to meat faster and not talk about our bowl of cereal in the morning and not talk about Brad's dancing, musical theater background and his tap dancing and all the things. So we are jumping right in. Today, we're going to talk about how to increase your prices and how much of that is contingent upon Econ Class 101, Module 1, Chapter 1, the principle of supply and demand, and how that single principle alone, how understanding that can help you bump up your prices over time and charge considerably more than what you're charging right now. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. And let's kick it off by talking to Brad about some of his very first design projects, your very first freelance project. Brad, what was your first ever freelance project? What did you do and what did you charge?
My first freelance project was a website, a straightforward brochure style website for a sports injury and chiropractic clinic. And it was back in 2009 when I was at the very beginning. I was a month into school at college doing web design and interactive design is what it was called. And my wife at a Christmas party, she introduced me to a coworker, colleague of hers who was leaving that position to go and start his own sports injury clinic with his wife. I got to talking, she introduced us and she's like, "Hey, you're starting your clinic. Brad's learning how to build websites. Maybe you can talk to each other and help each other out." We got to talking and I ultimately sent them an email offering to do the site for $495.
$495. Why did you choose that price, $495? Because you saw like a television priced that amount and you're like, I'm not going to charge $500. Yeah. I'm going to just bump it down $5 to be $495. Where did that price come from?
It's like charm pricing. It's like where you're, I think I just inherently thought $500 seems like I'm charging $500, but if I charge $495, maybe it'll feel less than $500. It was like that juvenile understanding of basically what Walmart uses, what telemarketers use, what people use.
What Ford Motor Company uses to price their cars.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That was mine.
Okay, good. Okay, so we have that little nugget. Let me tell you about my very first freelance project ever. This was 1996. Brad was 5 years old or 6 years old, something like that, back in that day.
96? Right? I would have been eight.
8 years old. So this was right before Brad started freelancing. This was my first freelance project ever. I had graduated from Indiana University, had a degree in studio art, and was just captured the realization that I didn't know jack squat. And I was like so humbled by my first couple job and interviews to realize, oh my gosh, I have a degree, but I don't know freaking anything. My design sucks. So I was hungry and ready to learn and ambitious. And I landed the American Evergreen Foundation. And as a client, they planted trees. You know, it was one of those nonprofit, we're going to plant thousands and thousands of trees to revegetate the earth. I did a website for them, and it was big at the time. It was probably 20 pages or so. And I charged them a whopping $250 for that. And you know what? It's comparable to what you probably charged in 2009 by inflation standards. You probably double, maybe even yours was even maybe a little less in total value of the dollar at the time.
How much was your say? $250?
Are you looking it up right now?
I'm on a inflation calculator right now.
That's so good.
What is it, 1996?
1996, $250.
All right. And 2009 was mine. So adjusting for inflation, $250 roughly. So in 96, in 2009 would have been about $323. I charged a little premium.
You were price gouging. That's what you were doing. Price gouging for your brochure site. At the time, Brad, that you had this project, this is all going to lead into what we're talking about today. At the time, how many other freelance projects did you have?
Zero.
Okay, zero. And I had zero freelance clients at the time. American Evergreen Foundation, very first freelance client. I had nothing else. And Brad, how many hours do you think you spent on that website creating it?
Oh man, I think I probably spent like 40 to 50 hours on that site.
Okay, so you worked for roughly $10 an hour.
Is that right? Or is that, I bet you it was even less.
No.
I guess $4.95,
While I'm talking, you can do the calculation. We're designer people. We don't know how to do math.
We got to
pull out your calculator and see where you land on this. So for me, it was similar. I probably spent 40 freaking hours on this website, man. I had a textured background and this long left side nav, and I was using frames in some of it so that it would scroll and the nav would stay where it was. And it was all this cool stuff, man. It was a great learning project for me, but I probably was making $5 an hour by the end of the thing. Brad, were you happy when you got paid your $495?
It was like the best $495 I think I'd ever made.
Yeah.
Mine was the best.
I still remember getting my money. For my $250, I bought a 27-inch Samsung television. You know, the big kind that used to fill the back seat of a car.
Yeah,
that was my purchase, and I was like, oh man, this is I can get used to this. Yeah. I just have to spend 40 hours working on this website, and then I can buy a TV. Woo! This is craziness. It was craziness. That was my first taste to it. I was so happy with that dollar amount that I had been paid. Okay, Brad, how much in 10 years later, 2019, you'd been freelancing for years and years, how much would you have charged for the same type of engagement that you had?
Oh, I can give you like a pretty straight up answer. That's almost exactly the date that you were saying. So maybe not 2019, but close to that, 2019.
Yeah.
Same sized site, in fact, smaller site. So the sports injury clinic would have been about 5 pages. And I said about 40 hours. This site I'm thinking about, I would have done less than 5 pages. In fact, I think it was like a 1 or 2 page site. And it was a 1 day project and it was
$10,000. $10,000.
So, yeah.
So hourly rate wise, you made $1,000 an hour.
Yeah.
Something along those lines, right?
Yeah.
And you fast forward 10 years from my 1996 project and it was 2006. I had my agency going. I think I probably had 10 employees or so at the time. And we were doing like a big project for us at that time was 50 grand, 40, 50 grand. A smaller size project for us at that time was like 5 to 10 grand. We would not have done anything for a client at 250 bucks. Like that was like a price point we weren't even going to touch. So what is the thing that changed in that 10 year span from when you were hungry and willing to work for 10 bucks an hour, making this awesome website versus 10 years later? What changed? What changed in you and your skill set and whatnot? What changed?
A few things changed. So obviously my skills became so much better. My confidence alongside that, but I think more importantly, my network and the requests that I would get. So the amount of incoming leads and opportunities coming out my way that I then get to decide whether or not I want to do the project or I have the time to do the project. And my name was out there more and I had more of a reputation and a network. So I would just have more opportunities. So I couldn't charge $495 at 40 hours of my time because now I could do that same site in half the time, in a quarter of the time, in a tenth of the time. And now I have more people requesting this service. So if I was charging $495 and I was doing 10 projects, I don't even think I'd have the time in the month. Like I was going to school, like there's tons of, I just didn't.
Yeah.
And then so going to fast forwarding to like 10 years after that, you know, I'm full time. I'm running a business and I've got 2 or 3 subcontractors working under me to help me deliver services. Like I can't afford to do that. So we're way better. We're way faster. We got more people requesting our services and I'm just astronomically better than I was 10 years prior.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the big difference for me too. It was like, I was hungry. I had 0 clients. 10 years later, I have an agency with 10 employees and I have 30 clients and all my other 30 clients were paying me $16,000 on average for a project. There was no way I was going to say yes to somebody for 250 bucks. It didn't make business sense for me to do things at that price point anymore. And this leads us into this idea of supply and demand. If you think of Econ 101, supply in creative services, the supply that we have is the amount of bandwidth or time that we have to be able to work on client projects. So that's what it is. It's supply. Our supply is that.
Okay.
The demand is the amount of clients requesting for us to use our time to create things for them. This is the supply and demand thing. And when I did my first freelance project, my wife was finishing school. We had no kids. I was going to work at Alpha Graphics. That was my first job out of college. Embarrassing. I'll tell that story in another time. But I was working at Alpha Graphics, punching a clock literally for my in and out of the company. And then I go home at the end of the day. My wife's writing her college papers and studying and doing all her stuff. I had freaking time. I didn't have anything else going on. I had time available. I had a lot of supply. But I had zero clients asking me for work. So I had no demand. And so this balance of supply and demand, if we look at it as a scale, it was out of balance. I had a lot of supply and very little demand. What you need to do in that situation is create demand to balance out the scale. You want supply and demand to be balanced in your business. So you need to create demand to balance out the scale. And how do you create demand? You do the things you have to do to get clients, to get customers. And sometimes it is charging less for a project than what even is industry standard. Sometimes you're going to be happy making $20 an hour on a project because you'd rather do that than work at McDonald's. I'd rather build a website for a client for 20 bucks an hour than work at McDonald's. And yeah, it's not $50,000 for that project, like the market says I should be charging, but I'm still making more and I have no other opportunities, no other demand. So this whole idea of supply and demand is to always be balancing out the scale. And we increase our prices to lessen demand. We lower our prices to increase demand. And it has a lot to do with the amount of supply we have, the time available. So you were talking 10 years later, you had a bunch of clients asking you for projects. So you weren't going to do something for $495 when you have five other projects going that are all $10,000 websites.
Yeah.
You had demand. So your prices go up to balance the scale again. What thoughts do you have on this?
Yeah, that checks out. That makes sense because as my supply of time and availability, even if you want to see it as availability, because maybe by saying
sure.
time, maybe some people go, well, I don't want to charge hourly and we don't do hourly work. We do fixed rates. We do day rates. We do value rates. Sure.
Let's call it capacity. Because capacity can be the amount of stress that you want to give into your business, the amount of time you want to invest into your business, the amount of resources you have to invest into it, the capacity of your business, I think is a good word.
Yeah. My capacity when I started was I had almost full capacity.
Yeah.
And so
available.
I'm fully available and there's no other demand for my capacity. For my services.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so this one opportunity comes by. It's actually a really valuable opportunity despite its really low price tag and large amount of effort because it was a learning lesson and it's what started me. But moving forward in 2019 to today, the capacity is at an all-time low. So they say you're time rich, like when you're young or when you're starting your web design business, but you're money poor, right? Mm-hmm. So now... very much so. I am time poor. Like I don't have a lot of time because my capacity is used up almost at full capacity with the projects I'm working on, the obligations I have, not only to my family, but professionally in my career, in my business, to my clients, to my partners, to the opportunities that I'm pursuing. So that's an all-time low. So if you are requesting a slice of my capacity, I necessarily have to charge a lot because if I give that capacity, that's something that is taking away from the other opportunities, which at this point in my business and career actually are lucrative. And if I take away from that, I'm actually taking away from my family and, you know, putting food on the table, paying bills, saving money, doing these sorts of things. So,
and that piece of capacity for your family is very expensive to purchase. Very expensive. But there's a price somewhere. Like if a client came to you and said, Brad, I need a freaking landing page conversion optimized with an email funnel and I need it by Monday and I have $500. What would you say?
I don't even know if I'd respond to the email. I don't even think it'd be worth $500 for me to respond.
I have $5 million.
Okay. We're making that happen.
Yeah, we're going to make it happen. Yeah. I'll blow off my kids. I'll blow off my kids for the weekend. You know, they can do without me because I'm going to be $5 million richer on Monday. because
kids,
of
daddy
that.
So there's daddy is not home for the whole weekend. Yeah.
Sorry, kids, you'll get over it. And your grandkids will be thankful that I sacrificed this one weekend for you. This is the mindset that happens. Now, in business, this supply and demand, or this capacity and the demand to use our capacity, is not something that changes dramatically overnight. You don't go from charging $495 for a website to $15,000 for a website overnight. Most people, that's not what happens. Most people scale their prices based on an increase in demand over time. So Brad, $495 for your first project in 2009. When did you do your first $1,000 plus project?
That would have been about, it probably would have been about a year later, because I'd been free. That was my first project. I started freelancing. That gave me another opportunity, which was, again, same lines. It wasn't a huge uptick. It was when, about a year later, I had more experience and more ability, but also my capacity would reduce because I was working with two or three or four people at the same time as going to school. And so that capacity was down. And I went, I can't do this for like $500 and $612 or whatever silly invoices I'd send. I was like, I can't do that. I started to realize that's not quite worth it anymore. It's not a fair trade. And so my invoices started to look more like $950, $995, you know,
$995.
Shining up. Yeah.
$999. You tricked it up exactly. $4.
You're paying $1,000, whether you like it or not, but I'll put a nine at the beginning. That's the way I approached it. And so it was about a year later that went to double the price.
Yeah. And when did you hit your first five-figure project?
First five-figure project would have been from that date. I went full-time in my business in 2012. And I'd quit my job as a developer at an agency. And I would be routinely charging, let's say, $3,000 to $6,000 for projects. And to me, I thought that was like, I was laughing. If I did two projects in a month, like I'm making a lot of money at that time.
Yeah. And for new in your life and career and your marriage and like family and all of a sudden you're like double dipping. That's how I felt when I started freelancing. I had my salary and I was making as much money every month freelancing. It was like I had double income.
It was
for
huge.
My first 6 months. Yeah,
exactly the same. And so when I'm going full time, my first five-figure project, it went like this, and I'll say it quickly. I had a friend that I worked at the agency with. He left to go work at a different agency. I went to go freelancing and start my studio. He said, "Hey, Brad, our agency, we want you to give us a quote on this project. I know you can do it. I worked with you. You're a great developer, and I know you could build this out for us." And so I came back and I gave him a $6,000 quote, basically on par with pretty much everything else I'd been building, maybe a little extra. And he came back and he said, "Brad, this looks great. I'm fully confident that you can do this. But before I send it on to my account manager, can you at least double the price and send it back? Don't change anything. Just make that number at least double." Why? Because other agencies, full agencies, are bidding on this project at about $50,000 to $60,000. And if you come in with a $6,000 quote, you'll get laughed out of the room. And I know you can do it. So just make it bigger so that they'll consider you. And so I was shocked and excited and really nervous. And so I literally just made the number, I think
12 grand,
12 grand. And I sent it over and they approved it right away. And I'd gone on to do lots of projects with them for at least a couple of years.
Yeah.
And so that would have been my
first. I love a friend like that. One of my first freelance clients that spawned into my agency was one of my friends from Fox when I was working at Fox, and she started working at Sony, and she said, "Oh, we need a new website for this one property at Sony. Mike, I want to hire you to do it. What would you charge?" And I was like, I don't know. In my head, I'm thinking, you know, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. What's my number? I was like, I don't know. And she was like, How about 20 grand? And I was like, okay, that sounds good. I'll do that. And it was like, for me, an immediate change of my money blueprint in my brain of how I was perceiving the dollars that are available inside of freelance things, sometimes we get this inner person that tells us, don't embarrass yourself and charge me $3,000 for this thing. It should be $20,000 or it should be 12. Don't give me six. It should be 12. Let me tell you another quick story on this. We got in trouble by one of the divisions at Fox that we were doing work for at my agency. This would have been 2010, probably 2000. Yeah, probably 2010, 2009. No, it's probably 2010. Anyway, doesn't matter. We got in trouble because our bid to do this one website was $60,000. And the upper level above our contact found out our price and said, and they were on one of the calls and they were like, feel like something fishy's going on here. Like, why is this $60,000? Because everybody else who bid it was a lot more than that. Why is it $60,000? They thought we were like pulling a fast one on them. That we had done, and for me at the time, coming out of the post-recession era of 2007, 2008, 2009, when the recession hit and the numbers were all crushed and people were panicking, losing jobs, and the stock market's like down 75%, I was like, freaking $60,000, sign me up. I want to get back into that level. But man, we were embarrassed by our price once they approached us like that. So every once in a while, we get that kind of person who says, don't you dare do it at that number. Give me a new number. Hopefully, everybody listening gets someone like that in their client life in the future. Yeah. I hope that for everybody.
Agreed.
Okay, those were a couple stories. Now, what I was getting at there, Brad, was, okay, $495, and then a year or two, a year later, you're doing a $1,000 website. A year or so after that, or whenever it was, you bid a site for $6,000, and the client says, double this. I'm not submitting it like this because it's embarrassing. Mm-hmm. And you double it and at 12. Now, all of a sudden, what becomes your baseline price for the work that you're doing?
From there, I basically realized that I shouldn't be charging anything less than, and I think at the time it was like 8,000. It was like, that's a minimum. Mm-hmm. I can't take anything other under that unless it's a project that I know is going to be worth more than that over the lifespan in a few months or something like that. Like, I'll take a $3,000 project if it's $3,000 a month for the next few months or something along those lines. But for me, doing sub 5,000 was actually neglectful, I think, was the way I approached it.
Yeah. And that's the way that it is too. It just, once you get to a new price threshold, that's the new price threshold. And it's because you know you can win at that number. You're like, okay, well, no more $6,000 things. My bottom's going to be 8, 12, 13 is going to be my average, and my bigger projects are going to be more than that. You start winning those and you realize your value, and you become capable of charging it because you charged it last time. So you can speak about money differently than you did before. When you did the site for $495, if you would have pitched $12,000 for that same project to the client, I suspect, and this would be me speaking about myself, I suspect that they would have thought something weird was going on. There's no way that you would have won it because your ability to speak about $12,000 at the time when you were doing work for $495 was so infantile. Like you could not discuss bigger numbers because it seemed so out of place with who you were at the time.
100%. I had no idea. The concept of $12,000 at the time was like, that's a year's worth of rent. So it was like, it wasn't even on the radar.
Yeah. I want to talk about this in one of the future podcasts. I'm big on this idea of a money blueprint, that we're all programmed to see money in a certain way. And a lot of it is based on how we were raised and our social influences and things. And we perceive money in a certain way. And then the speaking about this talks about how you see people who grow up in a challenging economic environment, and then, but they're super great athlete, and they get their, you know, $5 million signing bonus, and it's gone, poof, in they're bankrupt in a year. You see that kind of thing, or they win the lottery and they They spend it all. Somehow they spend it all because they're programmed to be more comfortable not having the money than having it. And one of the things we do as an entrepreneur is we always have to be leveling up the way that we perceive money. I talk about this a lot with people, and in my community, I try and reprogram my people. I talk about projects. I'm like, here's a project we did. Here, it was $120,000, and here's the proposal. And we walk through it, and I show them what we were charging for client projects so that they can get reprogrammed in their brain, and I can get them out of the $495 logo world and scale them up into the understanding that you can be $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $10,000 logos or $30,000 rebrands. So we have to reprogram ourselves. And some of that happens with this supply and demand. To bring it back to what we're talking about, all of a sudden, if you have clients, you have five clients who approach you and you bid the website to them for $3,000 each, and they all say yes, you're landing 100% of your projects. Most creatives or younger creatives are happy. They're like, freaking, I'm slaying this. I am slaying it. I'm winning 100% of my projects. And that is the wrong mindset.
That's
because
not a good
if you're winning, go ahead, Brad.
That's not a good thing to have a 100%.
It's not a good thing. Because if you're winning 100% of the projects, that means you have room to push up the price and price out clients somewhere in the range so that you're doing less work for the same amount of total revenue. Let's use $10,000 projects as a baseline because it's easy math. So you have five opportunities that you bid at $10,000 each, and every one of them says yes. 100% win rate. Brad's taking some notes so he can give us the metrics. You're going to make, in that world, $50,000 of revenue. Right?
Yep.
Now, if you take that same request from five different customers and you charge $20,000 to each of them in your proposal, and you win two of them, how much money are you going to make?
You got
so
four.
You lost three, you won two at 20 grand. It's easy math. I can do this math in my head,
you
Brad.
You can do that in your head. Oh, yeah, you got two clients. I mean, you got 40K. So your 40K. 20% win rate is you got two clients, now you got 40K. Less than your 100% win rate, but something tells me there that now you're working with two clients, not five.
Two clients, two projects, not five. And all of a sudden, you have found time. There's time available. And what are you going to do with the time that you would have spent on those three clients? What would you as an entrepreneur, Brad, do with that newfound time? Instead of 100% win, you're winning 20%. No, you're winning 40%, right?
40%? You said you did. Was it five?
You're winning. Yeah, you're winning 40% of your projects. So you lost three and you won two. You're winning 40% of your projects. What are you going to do with the 60% of your time that you would have spent on those lower paying projects?
I am going to go and get two more. I have time to get two more.
Yeah. You have time to sell. You have time to market. You have time to do your social media. You have time to go to the BNI networking event or to a conference or to fly and go visit a client who gave you work last week or last month or last year, and you can build a relationship with them because you have time. You're doing two projects for almost the same revenue that you would have gotten from doing five projects. And you spend that time or that capacity that you have, you spend that capacity improving your business, fixing your systems and processes and marketing and presentation skills and quantity of relationships and going and networking, doing all the things that are going to generate more opportunities for you. Brad, did you track, and I know I tracked everything and I'm proud of that. And I talk about it all the time, not to make people feel bad, but to inspire people to start tracking stuff. Did you track your win rate on projects over the years?
I was probably a healthy balance between where you are and where most people are, where they don't track anything. They don't have any gauge.
Yeah.
You know, and where you kind of track everything. I was somewhere in the middle of that where I started to see and associate my capacity with a value. And I would go, wait a minute. I did three projects for this much and I have this much capacity left. If I value my hour or my day at this much and I close more, I started to see and associate that. So I didn't have like a meticulous documentation process for that. But yeah. I did, however, and I've maintained this for years now. I think it's been about 6 or 7 years, my business. I do a monthly income versus expenses. My QuickBooks and stuff or automatically tracks all that stuff, but that's for my accountant. Yeah. For me, I manually input, what's my income? Where did it come from? What are my expenses? What's the profit and loss? What did I do? So I can look at, you know, the those opportunities and the cost and the value associated. So I was decent at tracking those things.
Okay, good. Okay, so going back to the data point, did you track your win rate? Like what percentage of proposals did you submit versus what percentage did you win?
Yeah, so I would have done that automatically with a tool I used. There's a software that I used for my proposals. So my estimates and proposals to my closed deals. And I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. I know I had lots of potential money sitting there, you know, that would be, if I were to close 100% of these, this is how much I would get. Obviously, it was never that. Yeah. But sure. I know that the tool that I used at the time, which I think was called Ballpark by Meta Labs, they tracked that. So I would send out, let's say, 10 proposals in a month, which is pretty standard. Mm-hmm. And I'd probably close, I don't know, 4, 5.
Good. 40 to 50% win rate. Let's just call it that because that's pretty common. That's pretty common. I tracked it over the run of my agency. We won 61% of the proposals that we submitted over the entire agency run. I'm really proud of that number. I love that number because it shows that I lost 40% of the opportunities. Usually, not always, but usually when you lose an opportunity that you're pitching, if not usually, frequently, it has something to do with the price. It has something to do with the price. If you're pitching right and building a relationship and presenting good business professionalism, you're going to win a lot of projects. But you want to price out some of these opportunities. You do not want to win all of them. So I like this 61%. Out of 10 bids, we won 60. Or out of 10, we won 6.
Yeah.
Out of 10, Brad thinks roughly won somewhere 4 or 5 out of 10. Good number. It's a good number. What does it tell you if you were bidding projects, you had 10 opportunities, Brad, and you were winning 2 out of 10? What would that tell you about your business?
That would tell me, to me, a couple things. One of a couple things. It could be all of the above or just one of them, which would be I'm charging too much for what I'm offering, which could be a question of value.
Yeah. And I think that's a great one. Let me interject something there. It's their perceived value.
Yeah.
You're trying to charge something to a client and they do not see it to be as valuable as the price you're presenting it with.
Mm-hmm. And that means,
what else would it tell you?
Yeah. So it would be the perceived value. So of the price, now, which could dovetail into the second reason, which is kind of related here, is if I actually genuinely believe that it is worth that higher price, the other problem that I'm not getting is that I'm not communicating that value. I'm just saying, I'm going to build you a website with 5 pages versus I'm enabling you to make 20% more revenue month over month and outclassing all of your competitors because our work is superior to anything your competitors have. So you're going to snatch up more market share. If I didn't say that or communicate that sort of value, they're not going to associate that price being worth it. So for me, it's you're pricing too high because your value is not being communicated. And then maybe the third thing would be, I don't have the pull. I don't have the clout or like I don't pack a punch because I'm kind of, I don't know, I just found you out of nowhere. You don't have a reputation.
Mm-hmm. I love reputation marketing and relationship marketing. We're going to talk about that in the next podcast episode. Nice. Okay, so those are all good takeaways. If you're winning too few, it tells you I have something to fix in my business. It could be my presentation skills. It could be that my price is too high. It could be that I'm not presenting or showing the value of the work, the end value to the client, the ROI that they can get from it. And ROI, by the way, is not just financial ROI. It could be brand growth, exposure, eyeballs. It could be a variety of different things that are the return that the client gets. But you're not communicating that. And so the client doesn't see the value based on what you want to charge. Okay, now if you're winning 10 out of 10, what does that tell you about your business?
That tells me that I am 100% charging way too little, because you can feel it. It's palpable when you send off an estimate for a project and mere moments later, it's a sounds good, let's go, or they've just paid it in full. You know you did something wrong, because they felt that they're getting away with something. Mm-hmm. And they are. They recognize that the value that they're getting is way more than what they're paying. And it's a heck of a deal. And it's one-sided. Mm-hmm. It's a one-sided deal, meaning they get the bulk of the value and they're kind of getting away with something. They're not doing anything unethical. Like, that's the price. Sure, I'll pay the price. But if it's a yes right away and all of them say that, you're charging way too low and you're underpricing, undervaluing.
Yeah. So how does somebody go about understanding their win rate? And what should be a takeaway for our listeners today on understanding this about your business?
Yeah. I think that there's no question you need to track your output. So you need to track as many kind of casts if you're fishing, right? You got to track each of those bids, and then track how many you won and how many you lost, and then use that as a metric to say, out of these totals, what's my win/loss rate? And then you can make some decisions on that. And you can do that manually using a spreadsheet, or like I mentioned, I was using a tool that tracks that for you. It tracks all of your proposals, and it tracks which ones you lost and which ones you won. You could see over time, even on a graph, how does your win rate, you know, change over time? So I would say 100% manual on a piece of paper in a spreadsheet, automated, whatever it is, track how many proposals you put out there and how many you win, so that you could see the actual percentage. And that percentage will tell you a lot. If it's really low, then something's wrong. And if it's really high, something's wrong.
So the sweet spot in the middle, in my opinion, is 50 to 70% win rate. I love that as a number. 50 to 70%, that's where you target. And if you're winning too much, something's wrong. If you're winning too little, something's wrong, just like Brad just said. Yeah. But you don't know, if you're not tracking this stuff, you don't know what's even happening in your business. We talked in one of our early podcasts about data tracking. It was our first podcast, first episode, tracking data, making analytical decisions based on analysis of data. Yep. This is one of the most important things. And when you get down to the crux of this, it is tracking your supply and demand. It's, I had this much demand. I have this much capacity or supply. I do not want to undersell my capacity. I don't want to sell it too cheap, my capacity. I don't want that to be too cheap. And if you're winning too many projects, then you're selling your capacity too cheap. If you're not winning enough, then you're putting higher value on your capacity than what your potential client perceives as the value. And you have to fix something in your sales.
100%. And I'll add one last piece there is you necessarily have to grow over time, not only because the market changes and there's inflation and whatnot, but because if you're doing something right in business, you're growing. That same thing goes for your clients. The clients that you're helping, that you're serving, they are growing. And if they're growing and you're not growing with them, meaning the projects that come your way aren't getting bigger and more expensive and there's more trust and value associated, then and you're staying still, like that's stagnant and your clients are outgrowing you. And that's not a good look. That's the sign of an unhealthy business. And I interviewed Marshall Fox on my YouTube channel some time ago, and I loved what he had to say. He said, like, you got to be growing with your clients, because that's like, if you're sitting there and those clients are coming and they're coming to you, but they stop coming to you because they've went on to successful businesses, and you're still down here kind of swimming in the kiddie pool, like it's an indication that something is wrong. So you need to necessarily be growing. And those smaller clients, you'll outgrow them, and you let the new guys take those jobs. Yeah. Like those are opportunities for the newbies.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. My vote on yes, you do need to continually increase your prices and scale your business. Not necessarily by hiring employees and big getting a cool office and all that stuff, but you need to scale up the level of your business over time. And my reasoning is because it's way too freaking hard to run a freaking business if you're not growing. Just go get a job somewhere. Yeah. If you don't have the goal of trying to continuously charge a little more, scale up your prices, scale up your capabilities, scale up your sales skills. If you're not trying to do that, man, just go get a job and have an easier life, because it's too hard. This business, creative industry, creative entrepreneurship is too hard to not be playing it as a game where you're trying to continually win the game and scale, increase, improve.
You're holding yourself back if you're not. And if you're not playing the game, and it's not a game that you play where you win, other people lose. It's actually the more you win, the more other people win as well. Because the people who I hire right now, currently in my business to help me with my operations, they want to keep getting those monthly deposits or payments or credit card payments. And they want that to keep coming all the time. In fact, when they come back next year and they say, hey, you know, like we kind of changed our pricing a little bit. Sure. Okay. Yeah, fine. Like they want that to happen. But if I'm not growing and I'm not succeeding and I have to go like, hey, sorry, like I can't pay for you anymore. Like that means I've negatively affected them. The more I win, the more you win, the more you win, the more the client wins. The more the client wins.
Think on that. Like the more it is to your client's advantage to pay more for the project, because the more they're paying, the more of your capacity you can give them. And let's define capacity as your time, your effort, your interest, your passion. That's your capacity. The more they're paying you, the more of your capacity you're going to want to give to the work that you're doing for them. So this is counterintuitive to designers too. They're like, and counterintuitive to clients, where they're sitting there thinking, oh, I've got to get a deal on this. Man, you do not want a deal. You don't want a deal on this. You want to buy someone's rabid passion so that they put every morsel of effort into the work that they can so that it generates the best results for you. And that's a counterintuitive statement or perspective that a lot of creatives and a lot of clients don't understand. But once you start understanding that, then don't be afraid to push up those prices. There was a show, I don't remember what it was. It was one of these investment-y shows or something. And it was the Jobs movie. That's what it was. The Jobs movie with Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah, yeah.
And Steve Jobs, Ashton Kutcher, sitting in his kitchen with all his little nerdy circuit guys all around. And they have their first investor guy who shows up in the Corvette. And that investor says, okay, Steve, I'll make you an offer. And he says the number. And Steve Jobs says, well, I don't think that's going to get it done. And then the investor guy says, well, that's the number you said. And he said, no, the number will get it done for me. I don't think it's going to get it done for you. I don't think the number you just offered is going to be a big enough investment to give you the return that you want to have from betting on Apple in the early rounds here. That's the perspective that we can bring to client meetings where we sit there and say, okay, this is going to be 10 grand. And if the client is sitting there saying, but can't you do it for 1,000? They don't believe in their own business.
Yeah.
And they don't believe in you. You have to help them perceive this transaction as an investment that's going to get them the results. And the more they haggle down your price, the less interested you're going to be in their project. Man, if we could teach our clients, the whole client base of the whole world, to understand that principle, how much better would it be for everybody?
Yeah, exactly. So long as we, as the service provider, can actually deliver on that.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
okay. Was delivering on expectations ever a problem for you, Brad?
No. Look, I always had capacity to do that, and yeah. I think really the only thing holding me back is when you're paid too little, you feel like you don't have the ability to deliver on it because you want to do more. But you're like, look, I got 3, 4, 5 other projects that are kind of giving me enough money to live. But if it's like, if you can give me the right amount, like, you've got my capacity because I don't need to like spread myself thin here.
Yep. Yeah. It's so much better for the client.
Yeah.
All right. We went on a few tangents in there, but it all hubbed around this idea of supply and demand.
Yeah.
Hopefully the listeners of Two Pixels Off got a few good little nuggies.
Yep.
Out of there. Brad, you didn't mention my knife wound in my face on here. for those of you that are watching the video version of Two Pixels Off
knife
today.
Wound.
This actually was a knife. It was a scalpel because I went to the dermatologist and I was like, dude, what is this? And there was some little tiny bump cyst on there that they cut out.
Should have stuck with knife wound, not scalpel.
I just want to be truthful. I want to be known for my integrity and truthfulness.
Yeah. I was walking around with my Leatherman and I slashed my face.
Man. It was a freaking bar fight. And you should see the other guy.
I love it. That's all I got to say. That's amazing. Well, as the intro host of today's episode, I want to say to everybody, thanks for listening. I hope that you got some value from this. If you did, let us know in a review. That's a great place to do that. Let us know, you know, if anything stood out about this episode, what you think about the show. Make sure to do that in your favorite podcast app. Also, go to 2pixelsoff.com. You can learn more about the podcast, see the entire history of our episodes, and kind of learn more about us as well. Mike, do you have anything else to add?
No, it was great. Super fun. Thank you. We got to the meat a lot faster this time. We did not talk about your dancing background and all of the stuff.
We'll
and
dovetail
I didn't sing the jingle in the intro. We just jumped right in. So that
maybe
was
that's fun. A good thing for everybody, right?
Maybe some people, you should have heard me do bass on the Two Pixels
Off.
Yeah,
I gotta say, you're a legit bass singer for sure.
Two Pixels Off.
You need a warm up, is what it is.
We'll
it's a knife
it.
Wound, it's affecting you.
It is. All right, man. All right, we'll everybody. See you next episode.
Next episode, yeah.